From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made on your most recent Zoom call. What were you wearing? There's a good chance you were wearing something with an elastic waistband. Or as a Connections listener named Michael explained, we call that a Quarren top. Business on the top, party on the bottom. I'll amend the definition of a Quarren top to include not just party on the bottom, but lazy on the bottom. At least that's how I feel. I'm not going to a party in fleece pajama pants, but I am absolutely during work meetings in them. And the question is, how permanent is the change in your wardrobe? Writing for The Atlantic, Amanda Mull has a new piece titled Burn All the Leggings. She asks, what do you wear to the reopening of society? And in the piece, Mull writes, quote, on a Friday afternoon in early March, I felt an urge I hadn't experienced in more than a year. I wanted to buy new clothes, outside clothes, clothes in which I would be perceived by others, clothes to wear to a party. The late winter sun had started to warm things up a bit. I was a week and a half removed from my first Pfizer shot, and those two facts combined to cause a flare of optimism so intense that I needed to express it. For this foolish optimism, I was greeted with leggings, row upon row of black leggings, and then some sweats and matching sets of sports bras and more leggings. And finally, once I scrolled far enough, some sweaters and jeans that clearly had been hanging around for months. Not for the first time during the pandemic, I stopped to consider whether I was wrong about what month it was or even what season. Fashion is an industry built on guessing what people will want to buy months in advance and serving it up to them before they even realize they want it. Yet everywhere I looked, there were no guesses at all about spring. Instead, there were hedged bets of which leggings are the official garment. End quote. Mull goes on to examine the history of pandemic impact on fashion norms and social expectations, but there was no Zoom in the 14th century and there were no yoga pants then either. And so this hour, we ask what your hopes and expectations are for the future of work clothes, of dress codes, of social attire, of what you wear and what you no longer consider putting on ever again. Our guests are going to help us with this hour. Alisa Whitfield is the founder and CEO of Dress for Success Rochester. Alisa, welcome. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here and talk about clothing after the pandemic.
Well, Elaine Spall, the executive director of Center for Youth, is with us, who has always been closely tied to Rochester Fashion Week, which I don't know if that's coming back anytime soon. Elaine? Hi.
Hello there, Evan, we're coming back. So we had a doggy casting call and people are ready. Evan, do you have a beard? I haven't seen you.
No, but wondering. Is all dogs? That's what you're doing?
No. Just we had 20 dogs and about 100 people. But, you know, we're coming back for the summer show. I'll tell you more about that. But so much to talk about in terms of even, I've been going back to my First Amendment days of teaching constitutional law, freedom of expression, freedom of speech. You know, dress is our speech. So lots to talk about, buddy. Thank you.
All right. Brianna Clark, co-founder of Candid Closet LLC. Welcome. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you for having me. I'm very excited to be here.
And Danielle Abramson, Associate Director of Major Giving at WXXI and one of the real fashionistas that I know.
Well, that's quite a compliment. Thank you, Evan.
You are. But you also have such an interesting background of a life sort of in dress codes in various places. And I know some strong opinions. So I'm glad to have you. Listeners, if you want to share your thoughts on dress code, you can do that. But I want to warn you, you're going to be competing with, well, let me just read what I have already seen, and then I'm going to kick it to the panel to respond to some of what we are already hearing from listeners who are dreading going back here. Stephen says, I'm hoping I don't have to go back to the office full time. That would definitely reduce the amount of time I wear dress pants versus jeans, or if they finally relent their stupid policy and let us wear jeans in the office. Sarah says, during my impressionable years, I read a Glamour magazine column called Hey, It's Okay. That told me, hey, it's okay if your winter wardrobe is your summer wardrobe plus tights. And I haven't looked back since. Our old colleague Brett Dahlberg says, I was a button-down shirt at the office kind of guy until last March. I immediately became a sweatpants everywhere and always guy when we started working from home, and I expect to be that way forever. Jen says, I've noticed how Zoom has changed fashion in the stores. A lot more high-neck blouses and elastic top pants. Michael says, I have my first work trip in a year tomorrow, and I will not be wearing a suit as usual. It might end up being the wrong decision, but it seems like the norms are changing significantly. Cece says, I was already on the path to comfortable shoes everywhere. I just landed a new gig where dress code is just nice jeans, nice top when in the office, which is almost never, and I'm in heaven. A big change from the always dressed up world of fundraising. And Jeremy says, I'll go back to the old clothes if I can lose this weight or not. And that's how a lot of people feel. How many of us have put on shirts? I put on a shirt last month and I went, I don't think I've changed that much. But I guess, I mean, wow. Certain things don't button the same way. It's a big change when you go back to the closet and you go, well, sorry, clothes, but I guess we're going to have to try to wear you again. And Daniel Abramson, what do you think here? I mean, I know you and many of our colleagues have had a chance to work from home quite a bit throughout the last year for WXXI. More people coming back to the office with vaccination. How do you feel about all this?
Well, I think it's really interesting. A lot of the comments that you just shared are echoing a lot of the sentiments that I personally have and things that I'm hearing from a lot of my colleagues, and then just generally people who are, especially within the corporate working world. And I think that's an important distinction that I would like to make here, is that there's, you know, a lot of different contexts when it comes to what we wear to work and what we're expected to wear. And I particularly would like to address what is seen as what is acceptable in a corporate structure or corporate culture, because I think that's a place where there's a lot of room for adjustment and reevaluation of what is acceptable. So I'm really at the point, and I think this pandemic has had a lot of positive and negative things, obviously. But one of the positive things is this reexamination of what does constitute professionalism when it comes to dress and the lens in which we look through that. I think that when you look throughout history, a lot of the ways that things have been defined as acceptable in a corporate environment or in a business office environment are things that are really inherently defined by white men in power. Therefore, everything sort of falls beneath that. And I think that, especially with things that are going on in society, the changes that we're seeing in terms of people of my generation, I'm an elder millennial, I love that term, are coming into their own positions of leadership, expectations, and all of these things. It's time to really examine and dismantle this very narrow myopic scope that we've been looking through as what's acceptable, because I think it has been a barrier for the ascension of people of color, for women, and it's been an artificial sort of parameter that we've used to define whether you're acceptable or not in a corporate structure. I thought it was hilarious this week that John Oliver particularly, and I hope our other guests can talk about this as well, but he dedicated the main part of his show this week to the examination of black hair and then how that is acceptable or deemed not acceptable in many places in the working world. And I think that's one example there of just there's a very small lens in which people are allowed to be seen as professional. And I think that we need to break out of that in order to be more open and truly equitable to really looking at what people's talents, skills, and abilities are and just not necessarily how they show up. That's also not to say that fashion is not important, because as you said, I do enjoy fashion, but I think it's more about, you know, not necessarily using this rigid, narrow definition of what defines professionalism.
Yeah, interesting. Brianna Clark, co-founder of Candid Closet LLC, how do you see it?
I wholeheartedly agree with those sentiments. So I'm a dark-skinned black femme, black woman, and this past pandemic, you know, obviously we were fighting too, as people like to say. And what I saw, what I experienced, and also put into action myself was life is so short. Life and life is a lot more worth living when you decide to take risks, whether that be with your hair. I started wearing hairstyles that I normally wouldn't wear in the office. I started, you know, taking fashion risks, and other people around me who were trying to liberate themselves in more ways than one started looking at themselves and saying, I'm going to take this risk. I'm going to be proud of who I am, where I come from, go back to my roots, and wear things that, you know, white men in power, shout out to them, have not seen as a corporate or professional in the past. But this is who I am, and I want to be as transparent as possible with my identity and how my identity is fashion, how my identity is professional, how my identity is acceptable and should be celebrated. And I think that this year has really uncovered, in, at least in the circles that I run in, has really uncovered the liberating feeling and the freeing feeling of taking risks when it comes to what you deem as professional, what you deem as corporate, what you deem as fashion, and how you decide to present yourself to the world and how you stop stifling yourself.
Mm. Well said, boy. Alisa Whitfield, founder and CEO of Dress for Success Rochester, how do you see this? Oh, we lost.
Well, I see.
Well, go ahead, Alisa. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Yeah, I see fashion. For me, fashion is armor. So While I agree with some of the things that are said, I believe that clothing can make you feel a certain way and can also, that clothing also expresses kind of how you feel on the inside. I'm getting an Amber alert. Hold on a second.
I'm sorry about that. Jeez.
Sorry.
Oh, no, it's okay.
I believe that it reflects how you feel about yourself on the inside. So during the pandemic, a lot of people were wearing sweats, and I have to admit I was one of those people too. But after about a month of doing so, I started to feel like those sweats, you know? And so I decided, all right, I'm going to put my tops on and make sure, you know, I'm looking and feeling professional. And it just kept my mood up. It kept me going. So I think that if people want to be a little more comfortable, that's fine. But they still need to realize that your clothing reflects something about yourself. And people are still going to judge no matter what you think. They're still going to wonder about you by the way that you're dressed.
Okay. And Elaine Spall, Executive Director of the Center for Youth, and coming to us with Rochester Fashion Week here. Is it time to burn all the leggings? How do you feel about it?
So, you know, I think what's happening, and let's think about the world we were in the uncertainty and the lack of control, and maybe the one thing we could control was, were we going to go gray? Were we going to grow our beards? Were we going to wear sweats? I was on a call this morning with a leadership group from Nazareth College, and there were women on the call who were dressed up, beautiful hair, earrings, others who had their pajamas on, and it was like nobody cared. So I think it's about choice, and a couple of the other speakers have focused on choice, being who we are, picking who we are, freedom of expression. Now, will that continue? Will we be able to choose, and will we actually, in fact, change the culture? Will we say, take off the tie? Will we say, I want to wear a cap? I want to wear a baseball cap inside. I want to, you know, hats have been an issue. We have constitutional law around, you know, cases around whether kids can wear hats in school as freedom of expression. So I think it has to do, Evan, with feeling that we had a choice. And for many of us, we put on our Saturday clothes, the clothes that you wear when you're, you know, watching Bridgerton, you know, episode after episode, and you're not leaving the couch much. We wore that all the time. Now, some people are choosing to get right back into fashion. Meg, yes. I hope we'll talk about that. People want to get fancy. People want to look good. People, I think the hardest thing is shoe wear. I think for most of us who have always worn high heels, high boots, you don't wear those for like 9 or 10 months, or it's hard to put those back on. I'd see you right now. But I do think it's a freedom. We were given some freedom. Now we're going to go back into, and I hope we don't feel like the workplace is a cage that we're walking back into, but the culture of a workplace, you know, I was just on a call a few minutes ago with some folks from a law firm. They're not wearing ties. Some of them aren't wearing jackets. Some of them are. And so people want to be free. They want to control the little bits of the world that we're in, which is pretty much out of control, as we all know. We want to control some things. How do we, in fact, hold on to that and still be part of a bigger world, a culture that does have some rules and parameters.
Yeah, and I think Elaine and our guests are giving us really a roadmap of two different directions here. I mean, one of them is just the question of what society expects, demands, allows, who is in power to make those decisions, what are some of the underlying issues behind that, and how might that lead to inequities, how might that change, how might our expectations of ourselves and our coworkers change. And then there's the question of the actual fashion itself, which in our second half hour, we're going to talk a little bit about that, because pandemics going back to the 1300s have changed fashion. And this was part of the piece that Amanda Mull wrote in The Atlantic, which was very interesting. So we are going in different directions. I will say this. I have nice jeans and I have beat around jeans. My nice jeans, I went back to that stack the other day. I had a pair that were button fly. Can we never do that again? What are we doing? Four buttons. What are we doing here? How long do we think men want to take? So there are certain mistakes that we can rectify right now.
That was a mistake, because just because it's out there doesn't mean you have to buy it.
That is really true. I bought it that one day going, well, they do look good. And I wish, and now it's like, no, the comfort is too important. I'm not sacrificing the comfort. But let me just stay. We'll get back to that in our second half hour. Let me just stay with the theme here. And let me turn back to Brianna Clark, co-founder of Candid Closet. So when we talk about who sort of sets the rules on fashion, we can talk all day if we want about what feels like it should change. The question is, how do we enact a workplace and sort of a societal culture that says that effectively changes it in a more equitable fashion? Where does that start, Brianna?
Great question. So it actually doesn't start with any specific actionable items. It actually starts with education, and it starts with decolonizing your mind. There are things, for example, we'll talk about locks. That are just a part of our culture, or bantu knots, which I've been rocking and having fun rocking for a little bit now, that are a part of our culture, or braids that are a part of our culture, and that people have been like going to work in and getting historically being sent home or fired for because they said it wasn't quote unquote corporate. And so we really have to start with education, decolonizing our minds and asking ourselves, when I see this hairstyle, when I see this type of fashion, when I see this type of presentation on a person who does not look like me, why do I automatically think it's wrong? Why do I automatically look at it in disgust, maybe? And I say that, for lack of a better word, why am I looking at it that way? And really unpacking within yourself how you can decolonize your mind and look at someone and think that is not only beauty, but also acceptable in spaces of professionalism, where we need to make sure that these voices and they are at the table. Because when you start asking people to take off parts of themselves just to show up to work, you are not getting what you need at some of these tables to really make sure you have an equitable workplace and make sure that whatever product you're presenting is inclusive. So really, it really truly starts with education and decolonizing your mind and unpacking the biases you have within yourself. And then from there, the actions will follow naturally.
And so, Brianna, there's a parallel that I think I see, and tell me if you think I'm going in the right direction here. NPR, NPR for many years now has made it a priority to make sure that the voices of its talent, on-air talent, Black voices, Latino voices, voices of color, are not forced to sound white, not forced to, conform. But I always say, like when I talk to students, for example, I always stress two things. I think, number one, authentic voices are what the world needs. You do not have to change who you are. You don't have to change your voice. You don't have to whiteinize your voice. You don't have to do that. That's not where this world's going, and that's not where the world should have ever been. But we can all improve. I can slow down more. We can all improve our broadcasting when we are on the air. I can improve it. Everybody can improve it. For too long, improve it has been code for sound whiter, as opposed mm-hmm. to just become a better broadcaster, but don't sacrifice your authenticity. And I wonder if that is where dress codes and fashion need to go. Brianna, what do you think?
So I would say that you can, so I like how you made that parallel, because at the end of the day, I can still speak culturally and use colloquialisms, but I can still speak clearly enough for this broadcast to be understood and be coherent to the listener. I can dress or present myself in a certain way that is still acceptable in the workplace. I can present both of those things, and there's not one way to do that. I think that, like, if I'm just coming in looking absolutely like I just literally got out of a tornado, that's one thing. But if I look and feel great, and I'm telling you this is how I want to present myself, or I'm telling you this is how I prefer to speak, and this is how I prefer to communicate, as long as there's a clear message, and as long as it's coherent and what I'm trying to present gets across, I don't see why I cannot do that and still present culturally and still speak colloquially, because you should be, like, people understand what I'm saying.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So, Evan, this is Elaine. One of the things that Brianna is saying is so important. Hairstyles, by the way, and the work that we do at the center with, you know, hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of city kids. Hairstyles are really important. Hairstyles mm-hmm. here. And I love what she's saying, because that is really a defining, that's the person, and that's where you have a freedom of expression. But I'm thinking, and I don't know if others agree, that maybe the flexibility, I'm just going to say flexibility, that we had during COVID, the fact that we just had to sort of go with it and be who we were and do our very best. We couldn't get our hair done. We couldn't get our hair cut. We began to get creative. And people of color actually got more creative than the rest of us. The rest of us just tried to cover our roots and put hats on. But, you know, that is it possible that what we have experienced will give us a flexibility that will stick? And that's what I think the question is. Will it stick? Not so much actually the corporate dress code. Women may go back to pantsuits or whatever. But, you know, will there be elements of what we just went through that are a freedom of expression, a grabbing, a bit of control, a bit of creativity, a bit more color in our dress, in our makeup, in our earrings? Is that something that maybe will stick? And that's one of the questions, I think, in the article and in our lives. And how do we make that stick? How can we? Now, fashion and Fashion Week, and we're coming back big, big, big. I can't tell you where yet, but we will be back in October. We're back this summer. And it could really make a difference.
Well, let me ask Elisa and Danielle about that. So, Elisa Whitfield, you know, to Brianna's point about, you know, it's one thing to look like you just came out of a tornado, and no matter who you are, you might look a little disheveled and unprofessional, versus expanding our, maybe to use Elaine's word, flexibility in evaluating what is professional and not just being sort of myopic about it. Elisa, I think of the various Zoom events I've done in the last year, and I'd be wearing a button-up shirt and a suit coat on the top, and then I think like ridiculous fleece pajama pants on the bottom that nobody would ever see. That is not a combination I would wear to work. There were times where I would look at myself in the mirror right before an event, and I would think, I look like I tried to race a bus and then accidentally got run over by it, and I got to clean myself up a little for this. I mean, I should probably shave. I should probably comb my hair. And I felt like, you know, it didn't take much. But how do we distinguish between, hey, you look like you didn't try, you look like you just stepped out of a tornado, versus I'm going to get more comfortable with what's different? Because I just got an email from David, Elisa, and I'd love for you to respond. David says, Evan, I personally feel the dress code is going to the wayside. It seems many people have no real sense for how they should dress at work, at restaurants, when they're shopping, on outings. At work, we've gone downhill from a suit and tie to sometimes jeans, which I feel is not appropriate for our business environment. I see people at nice restaurants wearing yoga or stretch pants or even what appears to be pajamas. It seems that we as a society are changing, much to my chagrin. That is from David. What would you say to that, Elisa?
David is my kind of guy. I think the same thing. I don't think that we all need to wear suits, but there's a level of decorum that I believe when you step into an office, you have to respect that environment. So while I agree with Brianna that we need to change in the matter of deciding what is professional and what is appropriate, I believe that there should be some kind of dress code for a professional workspace. I think it just, it brings people up to a different level. And, you know, traditionally, if you wore a suit or the higher you rose in a company, the better you dressed or the more corporate you dress. I don't think we're going back to that, but I do believe that employers are going to expect people to come to work looking what they deem as professional. And I would say if, you know, you really want to express yourself, maybe you talk to the employer and say, what is okay to wear here? Or you just try it out, wear something with color, add some items to make you feel like what you're wearing helps you stand out, but always be professional. I'm not in agreement with wearing pajamas out in public, but hey, that's just me. Aesthetically pleasing. And I think we're going to get back to that because I feel like people are tired of looking at like they're way too comfortable. People want to get back. They want to get back to work. They want to go out to events and they want to get back into that wardrobe. And not to mention, while the fashion industry has offered more options for feeling more comfortable and more athleisure wear, there's still a need and still a place for high fashion out there. Okay. I think people love that.
And Daniel Abramson, I mean, I have to defend my pajama pants. They're pretty hot. You'd be surprised. maybe I could pull them off. But Daniel, to the email from David, who says he feels dismay and chagrin at where our society is headed here, what would you say to him, Daniel?
Well, and like, you know, again, I feel like there's a distinction here because, you know, I had the good fortune of seeing Alisa out in the community and she is always on point and she is my fashion icon, but she's almost never in a suit. She's always looking really cute in great outfits. And that's what I aspire to in terms of like redefining what we are talking about in terms of fashion is something that, you know, to me, it's the definition of if you don't feel good, you probably don't look good. But there's a lot of people who, you know, their best outfit, the thing that they feel the hottest in, the smartest in, is not something that would be traditionally defined as corporately acceptable. And that's really where I'm asking us to reexamine that. And then to David's email, you know, saying something like, you know, seeing my coworker in jeans. And my question is why? Why would that make you feel like they're not able to perform? I often think, again, this is
right.
in what is acceptable white male definitions of professionalism, because you look at someone like, and I'll say the evil Mark Zuckerberg, who is arguably one of the most powerful men on earth, who is renowned for going to his business meetings, the majority of them in a hoodie and jeans. And that has not held him back from being powerful and successful. And so it's really that lens that I say, wait a second. So if this isn't about not having room for creativity, this is not having room for expression, because I think there is a lot of flexibility and movement there in most corporate spaces, but it's really looking at, what is that, those parameters that are being defined and how are they being applied? And then who is being held back from success because they are not necessarily willing to or able to or even want to fall within those very narrow definitions. I was just on LinkedIn earlier and looking at a group. It was a group picture of a bunch of Simon School grads. Every single one of them had a business suit on. And, you know, I was like, well, what if one of those people decided to put on like a really nice flared skirt? And what if one of those gentlemen had like an awesome, why did it have to be that way? So I guess that's really my question is, why, David, does that cause you to think that someone is not able to be good at their job? Because I also think on the flip side, there's a lot of people who have put suits on and gotten into high spaces, Donald Trump, who maybe shouldn't have done that. You know, somebody who buys an expensive suit and gets in the room with the people and looks good, but they're not actually worth the money of the suit. But because they have performed well and they're wearing the right costume, we think that they're acceptable. So that's the other part that I sort of want to, and I'm not, I'm just saying that it's really like, so again, people who are probably not deserving of their status, sometimes are given artificial elevation.
They look the part.
What they're wearing. Yeah. They look the part.
They look
so
the part.
That's the other thing that I would like us to ask the question is like, so because you could afford a $5,000 suit, does that make you worthy of being a CEO? In a lot of spaces, people would be like, yes.
Yeah, and if you're going to wear jeans and a hoodie to a meeting and you're not Mark Zuckerberg, are they going to allow it? Yeah, I mean, really interesting stuff. In a moment, I got to let Brianna Clark go. So can I ask Brianna just to make some final thoughts to leave with listeners, and then we're going to break and we're going to come back and we've got a lot more here as we talk fashion and dress codes post pandemic. Mm-hmm. Go ahead, Brianna.
So I guess I'll just say that I think that we really have to be expansive when it comes to fashion, be expansive when it comes to what's accessible where. We have to continue our creativity. We have to continue to liberate ourselves and decolonize our minds. And we also have to, in decolonizing our minds, we have to address classism within fashion and classism within the workplace and how sometimes what we don't deem as acceptable is just a reflection on learned behaviors and learned ideologies that we really need to dismantle within ourselves, because we are all acceptable all the time. And I'm the first person that loves to get dressed like down. I'm always dressed. But at the same time, we have to make sure that a lot of these things that we're asking of people are accessible.
Brianna Clark is co-founder of Candid Closet LLC. Thank you for making time for the program today.
Thank you.
And in a moment, we're going to come right back. We're going to welcome Meg Mundy from Fashion Week of Rochester. Elaine Spall is here. Elisa Whitfield is the founder and CEO of Dress for Success Rochester. And my colleague Daniel Abramson, Associate Director of Major Giving at WXXI. All here talking about our expectations for dress codes post-pandemic right here on Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Wednesday on our next Connections, a group on Seneca Lake is fighting what it calls Bitcoin mining. It's an operation that takes a lot of energy, a lot of power usage for cryptocurrency. It is a sort of a strange topic, esoteric, but we explain Bitcoin mining and cryptocurrency. And then Olga Khazan joins us in our second hour talking about her book, Weird. It's about the power of being different. Wednesday. This is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. I want to grab a phone call from a listener named Regan in Rochester. Go ahead, Regan.
Hi, Evan, and happy birthday.
Oh, thank you very much.
I love this conversation, and I think it trickles down all the way to school dress codes as well. Hmm. My daughter has been facing some issues at school because of the clothes that she likes to wear, and I find that girls female-facing individuals get sexualized a lot when it comes to the dress codes at school. And I just would like to hear comments from your guest today on that.
Okay. And can I just ask, how have you been trying to navigate all of this?
We talk about it a lot at home, about how who decides what is appropriate. And she has navigated this really well herself, actually. She got pulled into the principal's office and basically had a debate with the vice principal and the teacher, who told her that her outfit was inappropriate, saying, "What is inappropriate about my body?" And so we just continue to discuss it and support her in wearing what she wants to wear. And we will face what comes with that. As far as we have to.
Okay. And are you in a position where you feel like, I want her to have the space to do what she wants? Have you kind of grown to feel that way? Did you have any discomfort at first, or did you always feel like, this is her choice and it should be her choice?
Oh, definitely. Because we've all been conditioned, right, to think of what is appropriate and what is. And that always comes with how much skin is being shown. And the standards that we put specifically on females and femmes. And but I definitely have had to address even some of my own stuff that I was taught you know, growing up and what is professional and what is appropriate. And, you know, here's my 11-year-old expanding my mind and being a real advocate.
Okay. Hang there for a second, Regan. Elaine Spall, what comes to mind for you first?
Well, you know, I was talking a little bit earlier about freedom of expression. We have young people who are really beginning to question and look, and we want to keep that spirit going. I think, bravo, right, for this young person who is really offering and advocating and may get pushback, but we continue to move and to be who we are. And for her parents who say, let's think it through respectfully, let's talk about why it's important, there's, again, very little control in young people's lives. The way they look, the way they dress is one of the only ways in this system that we live in where people can have an opportunity to be who they are. So it's starting younger and younger, by the way. And it's sometimes, you know, there's adultism, so they know better and schools know better. And obviously, unless it is, you know, inappropriate in terms of, and I don't even know what the word inappropriate, but, you know, maybe unsafe, high heels or, you know, something that might be unsafe, I think the conversation has to take place and respectfully and having the right kind of advocacy, because our kids need to be able to express themselves. And again, it's a level of respect and sort of within some boundaries, but how fabulous that someone wants to be who they are and not just go along with a crowd. Right. So that, you know, you're talking to someone from the Center for Choice and Opportunity to Choose is the number one volunteering who they are. And everything we do is voluntary, even our shelters. So we're big on youth voice. And I applaud this, Evan. Honestly, I do.
Okay. Elisa, anything you want to offer Regan there?
Yeah, I have a daughter as well, and she went to a Catholic high school. So you can imagine the conversations we had about wardrobe and what was appropriate. And, you know, she had some of those incidents where she was called in saying her pants were too tight, or she needed to wear something different, or her strap was showing. And so I applaud you for getting on that really quickly and reassuring your daughter that she could speak up for herself and advocate for herself, because I, you know, had to do the same. And I really believe that now that more girls are speaking up about this, like, why are we put in charge of making sure that other people feel comfortable with how we look, you know? Mm-hmm. They're telling people this is not right. So I agree with everything that you said and what you have done with your daughter. I think more young women should speak up, and parents should speak up about the dress codes in schools as well.
Danielle, you had a dress code in school. Is that right?
Well, yeah, I was a product of Catholic school, so uniforms were what we wear. And so there's a whole, we could probably spend an entire hour talking about uniforms and what those meant. And a lot of the reason why uniforms are used in a lot of schools is to try to eliminate a lot of those issues, or try to add some sense of equitability, or everyone's wearing the same thing. But I'll tell you that even within that Catholic school, it was a, you know, white polo shirt and khakis, and even it was about what khakis you had. I mean, it literally, yeah. it there's always something within there. And I think that's the point, too. In addition, and I love what
Regan, yep.
You know, that she's making her giving her empowering her daughter to own her voice. And I think that's the important part about all of this is knowing that that it's not somebody else's responsibility, I think, as one of our other guests said, to allow for us to make them comfortable, to make society comfortable. So I think that is, I think that's a really important thing to be instilling, is that idea that, you know, you get to kind of have ownership over this narrative. And this also goes back to, let's extrapolate that idea of sexualization into the adult workplace. A lot of, you know, high heels were not created because they were comfortable or women wanted to wear them. It was because they made women's legs look good. And yes, I do own a couple pairs of them, but that was the context in which it was made professional. It's because you looked good to the corporate managers, almost all of whom were men, and that's what they wanted to see. So it's really just like looking at the origins of these things, going back again as to what is the context, the framework in which we've defined these things, and is there a room to dismantle that in order to allow for a more expansive definition of what is seen as professional, what is seen as acceptable, and what is seen as, worthy of being within leadership. You know, I think to a certain extent, you know, what we're saying, you do have to make sure that you look good, you feel good. But a lot of times the phrase dress for the job you want, and I think this is, you know, this mm-hmm. is a phrase that is used in a way that can hold people down artificially. Thank God there's organizations like Dress for Success that can provide opportunities, because this is also an economic issue. Buying yeah. fancy clothes that you might need to be dry cleaned and that kind of stuff, that's a lot of expense that a lot of people who don't have high incomes can afford a lot of times.
Yeah.
So maybe you have one good suit jacket that you can wear. You can't wear that 5 days a week, can you? It just becomes one of these issues of access and equitability, and having, you know, this idea of if you have these kind of fancy things, that means that you are acceptable. But if you can't afford them, then there's no room for you.
Yeah,
so I think that's what you're looking at.
It's such an important point. And so I want to bring in Meg Mundy from Fashion Week of Rochester. And as I do that, let me just piggyback on Danielle's point there. With a note from a listener named Jeremy who says, as people reevaluate their needs and new sizes post-pandemic, please be thoughtful about donating old work clothes or other clothes to organizations that can get them to people who really need them. It's from Jeremy. Good reminder, Jeremy. I appreciate
Thanks,
that.
Jeremy.
And Elisa Whitfield, is that you? I mean, with Dress for
yeah,
Success?
I mean, good. Thank you.
People can donate?
Yes, we will start collecting again in June because of the pandemic. We were, you know, just sporadically taking in things that were absolutely necessary at the time. And we even changed that process as well as what we were giving out, because we had to do curbside. So you can imagine going from personalized service of trying everything on and making sure people felt really great before they left. During the pandemic, we had to change that up. So we were sizing people up on Zoom and getting tops and jackets and jewelry so that they would look great on Zoom calls. So, yeah, we've had to adjust how we accept things, but it's definitely a need. The need is still there in the community.
Well, we're talking about how the pandemic will impact our expectations for dress codes and fashion. Amanda Moll, writing in The Atlantic, writes this about the history of pandemic impact on fashion over time. Quote, pestilence has a long history of influencing how people dress. The bubonic plague killed about half as much of Europe's population in the 1300s. It left survivors with hefty inheritances and higher wages. Some historians credit the plague for sparking demand for finely tailored clothing and luxury goods. Clothes became tighter, decorative features like buttons and fur trim became more common. People got really into grand headdresses. In this way, the plague gave rise to the Italian fashion industry, which still helps set global trends, end quote. And Moll goes on to point out that in other pandemics over time, concern about spreading germs led to the shortening of dresses and skirts so they weren't dragging on the ground, picking up dirt or germs. And so the idea, Meg Mundy, being we may not know what the impact of this pandemic is on fashion until we got about a decade under our belts here, if we're wearing belts at all. Meg, thanks for making time for the program. How are you?
Hi, fine. How are you? Hi, everybody.
Good. What do you think, Meg? Where's fashion going here?
Well, I mean, what I think is that people are just chomping at the bit to go out and look well. And I've seen it, you know, slowly things, people putting on clothes and being able to go to restaurants. And, you know, one of the things I can suggest is try, and we do have these issues of, you know, having been home and maybe eating a little bit more than we usually have because we're closer to our fridge. So, you know, putting something on with a zipper. And I mean, some of the trends that I've seen is fluorescent pops of color. I've seen a lot of headscarves, and I'm wondering if headscarves and hats. And I'm wondering if this had something to do with the pandemic where people they couldn't get their hair colored. So they had to figure out a way to still, you know, go out to the supermarket without their roots and things like that. I think people are going to dress up again. I think people missed, you know, feeling glamorous. And where, you know, no one loves to dress up more than me, but I do have to say the first thing I do when I get home is put on my sweatpants. But I got a little tired of it. And it doesn't give you that, no matter what you're wearing, whether it's a great little piece you picked up from Target, it's when you walk out the door and you feel like you have put yourself together, it does give you a certain sense of power and confidence.
Okay. Now, on the subject, though, of comfort, I mean, are there certain things that stand out to you, Meg, that are obvious switches that are coming our way that you wouldn't be surprised in 5 years if you look around and go, boy, nobody does this anymore, nobody wears that anymore, or look how many people are doing this or that?
Definitely. I think these comfort sets, they're monochromatic, they're sweatsuit-esque, but they've got a little bit more flair to them, maybe a beautiful cardigan with it, or you can even wear these comfort sets and throw a blazer over it, because a blazer always gives you a little bit of extra power in the look. I do think comfort's going to be around. I do feel like, you know, this whole sneaker trend where it's okay to wear sneakers to everything. I have a lot of friends that are like, I'll never put a high heel on again. So I definitely feel as though the comfort trend will be around, but it will ebb and flow with different styles, you know, maybe rein it in a little bit, where if you're going to wear your sweats out, you probably want to make them, you know, a little bit more fitted and not something that looks like a pajama pant, just because that's just not a great look to be out in the world in if you're looking at being in business, you know?
Okay. In a moment, I'm having so much fun asking Meg to predict the future, and she's so good at this that I'm going to ask the other guests for their thoughts on where they think we're probably going, either in work, social settings, otherwise. But Meg, one more question for you is,
yeah,
how much change do you think we're going to see at Fashion Week of Rochester this year, given all of these different circumstances?
I think what we're going to see this year at Fashion Week is a lot of people really excited to come out. I mean, I've checked in with all the boutiques and a lot of the local designers, and everybody's raring to get back to the runway and be creative. And I'm hoping that we'll see the normal group of people come out again. Of course, we'll be very cautious with our social distancing and things like that. But I think people, from what I hear, we just did a little doggy casting call for our July event, and the people that came out and the enthusiasm that they had and the joy that people have to just see each other again, I think we're going to see a lot of amazing creative stuff, because people have been pent up. And when you're pent up, you've got time to be creative. So I'm optimistic for Fashion Week.
Elaine Spall, 1 minute or less. Where is somewhere we're going with fashion, dress code, et cetera, that you can be relatively confident in post-pandemic?
People come out for Fashion Week in an amazing spot. We can't tell you where. Meg is putting prom dresses on in July, because these young women, high school students, could not wear their dresses and they can't wait. So yeah, I mean, I think we're going to see some old trends come back, some excitement come back. We're going to always be those people, as Meg said, who rush home and change back into our gear. And when we're on a call, you know, it's going to be fancy on top and whatever on the bottom, or nothing. Who knows what on the bottom?
The corn top.
Right, exactly. But I do think people want to dress up again and put on makeup and earrings. But choice. I'm with Danielle. Let's let people choose. We're going to sponsor something at the center called a Queer Gear Exchange, because retail is not particularly favorable to folks who want to dress differently or look differently or act differently. And so we got to get off that. We got to get way more flexible, and Rochester can do it. So Fashion Week's coming back, and you're awesome, Evan. You know I love you.
Well, Danielle Abramson, where are we going? What's your prediction here?
I can't wait to see how people continue to match their masks to their outfits going forward. That's the thing.
And, you know, and I think it's important that we remember, too, like, I'm looking forward to, like, going out and getting fancy, as our guests have talking about. Hopefully, you know, there'll be something cool at this very exciting venue that you're teasing, Elaine. Sounds really cool. So looking forward to all that fashion week. So, you know, there's that kind of context in being out and kind of having time to show off. But also the context of, you know, we come to these jobs 40 hours a week, often more. It's a significant part of our lives. You know, we're asking people to bring their whole authentic selves to these jobs in order to be passionate and committed to the work we do, particularly in a nonprofit context. So in that space, I say, how can we be our most authentic selves and expand that definition to bring more people into these spaces to get more ideas, get more perspectives, and allow for space that maybe hadn't been available to people before because of our very narrow scope? So that would be my thought.
And Elisa Whitfield, founder and CEO of Dress for Success Rochester, 30 seconds. Go ahead, Elisa.
Yes, I think that fashion is going to be more fun, and people are going to experiment more with the clothing that they already have in their closet, mixing it up, because we weren't able to go out and shop. So people had to take the clothes that they already had in their wardrobe and make them last over the last couple of years. So I think that's where we'll be going is, and I love to teach people how to do this, mix and match and create a new wardrobe on your own.
Well, thank you for taking the time for being with us, Elisa. Great having you.
Thank you.
Hey,
take care and happy birthday.
Oh, thank you. And we're going to answer
Evan, to answer
Amanda Mull's question. We're not going to burn all the leggings. We're going to donate those. We're just going to burn the buttonfly jeans. That's good for nobody. Elaine Spall, Executive Director of the Center for Youth and Fashion Week Rochester. We'll talk soon.
Talk soon, buddy. Love you.
Meg Mundy, thank you. I know we'll talk to you soon, too. Thank you, Meg.
I hope so. Thank you.
And Danielle Abramson, the best, the Associate Director of Major Giving at WXXI. Always nice to talk to you here. Well, wherever I see you. Nice to talk to you. Thank you, Danielle.
You enjoy your birthday, Evan.
Thank you. Rob Braden, Emery Stein, Megan Mack, Evan Dawson saying thanks for being with us, and we will talk to you tomorrow.